Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go on the air?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Hola, buenos dias, bonjour, como se va, good to morgue, ni hao, and hello to all of you wherever you are in the world. This is the Jared Nicole Show every Tuesday from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Central Time. I'm so excited to be back here again with you all every Tuesday as well. It's such a blast. Thank you guys so much for supporting me every week and always tuning in and commenting and liking and sharing my posts. I really appreciate it. So I'm so glad to be back again today. I want to just start off talking to you guys, catching you guys up. Things are opening back up. I went out this weekend. By the way, if any of you guys are looking for a new place to try in Fort Worth, Coco Shrimp was amazing. It was my friend Jordan's birthday, so we went there and we got to eat some delicious, oh my God, they were so good, these coconut shrimp tacos. Shout out to Jamie Davidson for the recommendation, by the way. And we went bowling, and so I was walking around and I kind of noticed there's more and more people getting out and about, people of all ages, young people, older people. A lot of people actually didn't have their masks, which I was surprised. We definitely wore ours, except, of course, when you're sitting down and eating, we took it off to eat because it would be almost impossible, right, to try to eat with your mask on. But there's a lot of people who didn't have their mask on, and I was just wondering and kind of curious, okay, are the majority of people doing it maybe because more and more people are getting vaccinated, right? And so people are kind of like, well, since I'm getting vaccinated, or I have gotten vaccinated or got one shot, or I just got the second shot, maybe they feel like they don't really need to wear their mask as much. So, but I wanted to know about you guys now that things are opening back up. Are you guys getting out there? Are you guys going out, going shopping? Anybody taking, you know, anybody going to a club or anything like that? Places, bars? I've been seeing on, you know, social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, some people going out and being like right next to each other, like super close and, you know, dancing, just enjoying life, having a grand old time. But I am curious, are you guys at that level yet? For those of you who have been vaccinated and those of you who haven't, are you looking to get vaccinated? Is there anything holding you up? So I do want to hear from you guys as well. I always say every show, please, please, please feel free to comment. If you have a question for any of our guests, please join us on, I can bring you on camera and you can ask them a question. You can ask me a question, but I love interacting with you guys and hearing from you guys every single week. So I'm super excited. So we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to move right along for the show. Alrighty, you guys, and we are back again. For those of you who are just now tuning in, maybe you're snacking on your lunch break or getting ready to go on your lunch break, depending on your time zone. This is the Jaira Nicole Show every Tuesday with me, your host, Jaira Nicole. I'm from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. I'm really excited about today's show. I know I say that for every show, right? But, well, I'm always excited because I have such incredible guests, but I'm really excited about today's show because I want to talk to you guys about basically trying to fit in and be accepted by society, right? How do I start this? I feel like growing up, you know, back when I did, I'm a 90s kid, right? So before social media and we had all of these things out there that we can constantly get online, like share. As a kid, we were outside a lot more. I know people who are way older than me, my parents, my grandparents' age, they're always, and I'm sure you guys hear them say, we were outside. We weren't constantly glued to our laptops or phone screens or computers, and they were interacting more with people. But I just remember growing up, and I didn't feel all this pressure to fit in with society or meet society standards, right? And so our guests for today are individuals who, what they chose to do or maybe how they look or the things that they are interested in, they don't necessarily fit in with society, right? And it's important to not let society define you as a person. I can think back to when I was a younger, when I was a young girl, and I'll never forget, I was at my dance studio, and I've shared this with you guys before, that growing up, I used to love Barbies. I'm pretty sure I shared it on National Barbie Day with you guys when I had my show. And so I'm in dance class and everybody's talking, you know, what, I was probably like 7, 8, 9, however old I was, talking about the things that we like. And one girl was like, I think Barbies are stupid. Like, I hate Barbies, blah, blah. And then everybody else chimed in and they're like, Barbies are stupid. And I absolutely loved Barbies, but just because everybody else was talking about how stupid Barbies were, here I go chiming in like, yeah, Barbies are stupid. I don't even know who would play with them, yet I'm going home playing with my Barbies. And so it's just funny how as a little kid, you start kind of becoming more aware of things that society says is cool or that you can do. And sometimes we go with it. And there's other people who are like, you know what, I don't care what society has to say. If society thinks that, you know, me riding a bicycle every day at the park is weird, or the fact that I like the color blue or pink or whatever, you know, there are people who are defiant and they're like, I don't care. But a lot of times, especially with social media, I find that we're still not at that point where people can just be themselves and live freely. We're always constantly worried about what people have to say. And it can even get, you can even bring it to more serious points where there's so many people out there who they don't pursue the things they want to do, or they don't pursue their passions just because society is telling them, you're not going to be able to do this. There's no money in it. It's silly, stupid. Why waste your time? And people don't end up doing what they want to do. And as a result of that, they kind of build this resentment. They get frustrated. They become bitter, right? Maybe they're in a bad mood. And maybe that's happened to you. Maybe it's happened to people around you that you know. So before I bring on our guests, I just want to encourage you guys that there's something that you're passionate about or that you have an interest in and that you love to do, don't be afraid to do it just because of fear of being accepted by society. And it doesn't matter if you're young and it doesn't matter if you're old, because there's so many people I'm finding in this career, actually, where I've talked to older people who are just telling me, you know, Jar, I'm so glad you're pursuing what you want to do. Do it, because if I could go back to when I was your age and I was younger, I would have totally told myself to just go after and do what I wanted to do. I, you know, turned down opportunities, or I didn't do this because I did it. I feared, you know, my parents wouldn't like it, or I thought that, you know, I would never get to this point of view or do this, or I was afraid of the backlash. So for those of you who are out there and there's something that you want to do, I encourage you guys to do it. So I did want to go ahead and let you guys know that the show was pre-recorded. As you know, with people's busy lives and schedules, sometimes I have to do pre-recorded shows. But if you guys have any questions throughout throughout the show, as you're watching the interview with the guest, please ask, and I will be responding back to you guys. And as well, if you have any questions for the guest, I would love to share those questions with them. And as they're watching as well, they will be able to respond to you guys. So I'm going to let you guys know we have two special guests for today. My first guest, her name is Miss Morgana. She actually is working as a professional mermaid. So now you guys can see why I was tying in the whole doing things that are different than what society expects. So she's going to come on and talk about that. And then later, I also have Ms. Toria Jones, who's going to be talking about raising awareness for disabilities, people living with disabilities, and the social oppression that they experience just because they're different based on how they look or what they're able to do or can't do, and how society basically isn't making accommodations for them. So she has some really great things to say. So we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back with that, and we will just keep trucking along. So don't go away. Stay tuned for more. We're back again. If you're just now tuning in, this is the Jaira Nicole Show every Tuesdays from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. I have two very special guests for today, and I'm going to go ahead and get it started. So I'm going to go ahead and play the video, and you guys enjoy. Much for tuning in, and we are back with our second guest of today, Miss Morgana, who is going to tell us about her life as a professional mermaid. It's so funny because when you think about it, when you're a child and people ask you, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? I know I think about things and I'm like, I would say I wanted to be a dancer, I would want to be a ballerina,
I would want to be a mermaid, but never did I think that this was something that people could actually do. And so I'm super excited to bring Miss Morgana onto the screen right now because she's going to tell us exactly what it's like living life as a professional mermaid. Can you guys believe it? So let me go ahead and add her to the stream. Hi, Morgana. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for joining the show today. I have so many questions. I'm just so excited, so curious. And I just want you to go ahead and introduce yourself to viewers and tell us a little bit about your personal story and how you ended up as a professional mermaid.
Well, absolutely. So my name is Morgana, and I started out as a circus artist about 10 years ago. I started out as an aerialist, actually, doing aerial dance. And from there, sort of expanded into fire and expanded into silk and eventually expanded into mermaiding. And mermaiding rapidly became my life. It happened very, very quickly. It took off. I had just more requests for mermaid performers than I could physically even do myself, and way more than anything else. So I decided that if there was this much demand for mermaids, I better get some more mermaids. And I sort of collected and trained, and now I run a group called the Circus Siren Pod, which is a team of 19 professional mermaids that perform all over the country.
Wow, that's amazing. That's incredible. So my first question to you is, which I know people are wondering, is, as I stated earlier, growing up as a kid, did you ever see yourself doing something like this?
Oh, not at all. I actually grew up very afraid of the water. It's kind of a funny story because so many professional mermaids, they do have that like, oh, I saw Disney when I was little and I always wanted to be Ariel. I do not have that story. Like, it's beautiful and it's magical, but it's not me. I had a near drowning experience when I was very young, and I just never liked to put my head under the water ever since then. I went to school for engineering. I was on a military scholarship. I was supposed to go into the Army and be an engineer, and that was my career plan. And clearly it didn't go that way. Yeah.
Hey, absolutely. So you're scheduled on the path to be an engineer, and now you're a professional mermaid. Right. I don't even know what to say. I mean, what are some of the responses that you get when people ask you, you know, Morgana, what is it that you do? And you tell them you're a professional mermaid. Are you met with people kind of like, what? What is
that? Mostly disbelief, yeah. Right. It's getting more popular. So there are people like, oh, my God, I've never met like one of you before. And then they have 1,000 questions. But for the most part, people seem to think I'm joking.
Wow.
And they're like, oh, no, what do you really do? And I'm like, no, I was serious about the mermaid thing. I'm way too serious about the mermaid thing.
Wow. That's incredible. So what exactly do you do? I know professional mermaid is kind of broad, so people are still wondering, okay, what does that look like? What do you do on a daily basis, every day? What do you have to do?
I always tell people there are 1,000 ways to be a mermaid. Like, mermaid is a genre, not a specific necessary thing. It's kind of like engineer. There's a bunch of different types of engineers. You know, it's a category. So what my team does, what I do, what my company is really known for is tank shows. We have 3 travel tanks. We travel around the country. We have hyper-realistic mermaid tales, and we're doing dive shows. That's our main form of entertainment. We do some meet and greets and things like that as well. But then there's also mermaids who do birthday parties for small children. There's mermaids who do a lot of environmental educational thing. There's mermaids who focus more on modeling. So it really depends on like what kind of mermaid you want to be, what you do. But again, with us, it's all tanks and travel and these sort of large scale performances. We work with aquariums, casinos, large scale festivals. So as to my day to day, it's not as glamorous as you might think. I do a lot of planning, and the engineering degree does come in handy because when you're moving huge tanks of water, that takes a lot of planning and a lot of understanding the science. And sometimes a lot of on-site repair, being able to set them up and make sure they don't leak and everything, all your filters and pumps are going. So my day-to-day involves a lot more math, science, and engineering than I expected to be in mermaiding, but it's all the living for those hours where we get to perform.
Wow, that sounds amazing. And I love how you said that you're able to tie in some of the things you learned about engineering as well and incorporate it into your career. So my question to you is, why do you think mermaiding, if that's the proper
term, that's the verb.
That's okay. I was like, mermaiding, is that right? Yeah. Mermaiding is so popular. Why do you think it attracts so many people? And it's like you said, kind of like blossomed into its own genre, its own career, and people can actually now apply to be a professional mermaid. What do you think it is about mermaids?
I think the really cool thing about mermaids is there's really no bound on how to be a mermaid. There's every single culture in the world has some variety of a mermaid legend. So it's clearly something that just has fascinated humans for thousands of years. There's got to be something intrinsic about it that we love. But because of that, there's mermaid stories about mermaids that are 3 inches long. There's mermaid stories about mermaids the size of a great blue whale. There's every gender, race, size, you name it. There's sinister, dark, deadly mermaids. There's happy-go-lucky mermaids. And I think this is why it's so appealing, is whatever your personal image of what it means to be a mermaid is, that's an option. Yeah. And it's really an endless sort of world of creativity.
I love that. So for you, what kind of keeps you motivated and going in this career? Because like you said, it's not always as glamorous, right, as people might imagine or think, like, wow, she's a mermaid. You know, she gets to travel and tour and do all of these shows. But what keeps you going? Because I know there are times where you're probably exhausted from all of the shows and doing things. So what do you use to keep yourself motivated and inspired?
For me, it's really my team that I've built. It's become so much more than I ever could have done by myself. And I'm so proud of them, and they're kind of what gets me up in the morning. I have 19 mermaids now of various genders. We use the term mermaids the same way you would use the term, like, talk about cows having four stomachs. You don't mean you're not talking about bulls, just that's the term people generally use. So that includes the men. So I have 19 mermaids, and some of them were mermaid performers before I found them. Some of them I trained from the very first time they ever put on a tail. And watching them grow and wanting to give them opportunities and make their dreams come true has really become my focus and my motivation. There are days I don't want to get out of bed, but I want them to have work. I want them to keep improving. And because of that, like, I need to ship. And I'm
doing this during COVID, because that's a year ago. We were shut down, you know. I have a lot of friends who are in the arts and theater and entertainment industry, and boy, did they just share with me how hard it was for them to, you know, find a job. They missed performing. They missed going out. They missed being with cast members and, you know, things of that nature. And COVID really took a hard hit on everybody. But and jobs, a lot of people in the arts and entertainment industry, they weren't able, you know, to fend for themselves. They basically had to go out and get regular jobs. So paint us a picture and walk us through what that was like.
I mean, I agree with you. I think arts and entertainment, we always joke within the industry that we were, the dark joke, that we were the first industry to shut down, and we will be the last one to open back up. Like, it is probably the industry that got hit the hardest. Because there isn't even a way to do things part way, the way that the hospitality industry kind of has made it to the restaurant industry. We're just out.
Right.
And so we did what a lot of people did, which was to try to pivot to the internet, but that doesn't really work when we're used to crowds of 3,000-5,000 people. Like, that's our niche. That's the level that we perform at. And so you can't gather that many people, and you really can't even gather that many people on a live stream. Plus, our art form doesn't translate well to the internet. The whole point is that it's interactive, that it's your experiencing meeting a mermaid. Like, that's the magic of the show. And that doesn't work on the internet, where you could also just, like, YouTube a mermaid video. That's the same experience. We did a couple of things to try to stay afloat, pun fully intended. We released a calendar, which was a first for us. We'd never tried to release merch of any variety. So we shot a full underwater calendar in one of our tanks and released that. That helped a lot. And then we created a Patreon for the people who wanted to kind of follow the mermaid journey and see more of the behind the scenes and get to kind of know the team as we are. And we focused that Patreon a little more towards the growing mermaid industry rather than just the general public. Like, most of our performances are focused on the public. With COVID, we started focusing more on our industry, and a big part of that Patreon is now training up-and-coming mermaids, mermaids who, people who want to get into mermaiding, people who have been mermaiding a little bit and want to take a pro. we started putting out resources for people who are trying to make a career out of mermaiding.
Wow, that's incredible. I love how you guys have been able to kind of pivot and find a way to, you know, keep going and be creative when, like I said, COVID basically didn't allow people to breathe for the most part. So I think that's so inspiring. And so for people, there's unfortunately a lot of people out there who I've seen have been kind of critical. You know, they may think like, oh, professional mermaiding, like, sounds cool, sounds unique, or just even like circus entertainers or just, you know, things of that nature. They think it sounds cool and unique, but they're like, is it a real, you know, they don't consider it a real...
Is it a real job?
Right. Yeah. They don't, they consider it more like a gig, or it's not really essential or needed. So you, as someone who is a professional, mermaid, and someone who's also an entrepreneur, you know, building your team, having your own company, what would you say to those critics?
So the first thing I tend to say, well, you know, if they're the kind of person who has also built a $500,000 company before they were 30, I would be happy to listen to their critiques. But in all seriousness, I tend to remind them to just let people enjoy things. Not everything has to be curing cancer or advances in science. Like, it's great that those things exist, and it's great that there are incredible people working in those fields. But let people enjoy things. We all just spent the last year, you know, binging shows on streaming services and listening to music. So you can't tell me for a second that the arts aren't important.
You're right.
The arts are all that kept us going for the last 13 months.
You're absolutely right.
This is the arts, you know, and that escapism and that magic and that being able to believe even for a little bit in something bigger than yourself and something otherworldly, that has value. And at the end of the day, if people want to go see mermaids, let them go see mermaids.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I just feel like in today's society, we just live in a world where people are constantly nitpicking and critiquing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, people don't even realize it is the arts that keep us going. I can't tell you how many times I saw on social media people saying like, oh, I need a new, you know, show to watch on
Netflix.
Exactly. Somebody recommend me something, or discovering new music, or, you know, going back outside, you know, reading, just different things.
And like, people were lamenting, you know, all these conventions have been shut down and all these events, and then they turn around in the same breath and say, oh, well, those events, you know, we don't need them. They aren't essential. No, humans congregate. That's what we do. We're doing the right thing by not doing that right now.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that those things are superfluous.
Right. Absolutely. So my next question for you is, what would you say to maybe that 5-year-old girl or that 13-year-old girl or that 16-year-old girl when she's sitting down at home with her parents and they're talking, right? And let's go with the 16-year-old girl, and they're saying, you know, college is coming up. You need to be prepared. There's things you want to do. And she looks at them and say, Mom and Dad, I don't want to go to college. I really have a passion and I want to be a professional mermaid. And her parents are freaking out because they're like, what? Is this realistic? You know, we want you to go to school. Or maybe she wants to go to school, but she still wants to be a professional mermaid and she doesn't know exactly how to go about that. What advice would you offer to her, or for people who that's something they want to pursue, but they almost are push towards not doing it, not pursuing it, because they're afraid of the backlash, right, that's going to come from society or family, friends?
So I think overall, our parents, for the most part, not everyone's parents, but for the most part, parents mean well. And I think that a lot of times when parents discourage their children from going into the arts, what they want for their child is stability. And they know that artistic fields don't have that stability, and that's why they push for, you know, college or business school or something like that. And I understand where they're coming from, but it isn't for everyone. I mean, again, I had a scholarship for the military. I was going for engineering, and I know for a fact I would have been miserable.
Wow.
So there's a recognizing that's not for everyone. And then on the flip side, education is important, but that education doesn't have to come in a classroom. The field of mermaiding is growing so fast and so huge, and there are so many resources now that weren't available 10 years ago. When I started mermaiding, there weren't tutorials on YouTube, there weren't conventions, there weren't classes you could take, there weren't certifications. I mean, I've been doing this longer than most tail makers have been in business. Like there was nothing when we started out. And now there's conventions, there's certifications, there's whole career paths that you can make out of mermaiding. So doing the research and then getting the education to go alongside it, if you're worried about the financial viability of supporting yourself on mermaiding, put it right next to becoming a dive master and then work at a dive shop where you can also do mermaiding and marry those two things together so that you have a little more versatility and a little more financial security that way, because you have an education that can be used in various ways, even if mermaiding is what you ultimately want to do with it. And the big thing I tell people is to come to MerMagicCon. MerMagicCon is a mermaid convention. It's the largest mermaid convention in the world. It happens in the Washington, D.C. area in Manassas, Virginia every year. Normally it's in like February, but COVID, so right now it's rescheduled for August, and hopefully by then it's safe or they'll cancel, or who knows. But MerMagicCon has classes for everyone from very beginner, has never put on a fin in their life, to super professional and does this for a living. It's got professional mermaids from all over the world. It's got business classes. It's got tax experts, marketing experts. Like, it's just, if you want to make a career out of it, like, MerMagicCon is the place to be.
Wow, that sounds, gosh, that sounds amazing. And
I'm so jealous of the new generation of mermaids because I don't have any of that.
I bet. So what are some of the things that you would recommend in terms of for people that kind of educate themselves about becoming a mermaid, or even people who maybe they don't want to necessarily be a mermaid, but, you know, they're just curious to learn more about, like, what you do and what, you know, the purpose of mermaids are in general. So do you have any resources where people can go, any websites or books or just anything that you'd recommend?
I mean, shameless self-plug, I definitely recommend our Patreon. we post a lot of behind the scenes. We post a lot of business information at various levels. And we also run a monthly AMA session where people who just are interested can come on and ask us anything they want, and we'll be pretty honest with you on those sessions. Yeah, they're a lot of fun. And following mermaids on social media is very hit or miss, because some of them are a little more on the business side and will be a little more transparent about that business. Some of them, their social media is for the character they created. So you can sort of glean information by how they're doing it. But the important thing is that you don't have to create your career path in mermaiding anything like anyone else's career path.
Mm-hmm.
So there's videos on YouTube, which I don't necessarily recommend, because learning anything in water from YouTube is
right.
Not the best plan.
Right.
But you can also seek out classes at your local pools. There's mermaid classes. He's putting out a mermaid certification. There's training you can actually go get from professionals, from people who have been through this. And overall, I would just spend some time asking what it is you want to do in mermaiding, because again, it's a wide world. If you want to be a model, there's a different set of skills you're going to want for that than if you want to be a live performer, than if you want to make coloring books.
Wow. Incredible. So let's talk a little bit about like the training and then actually like putting on that mermaid stuff, because I know I'm sure it's a question that comes up a lot for you. A lot of people are asking, how heavy is it? What that's like? So can you share a little bit about, you know, the training that goes into as a mermaid, how much time you spend in the water, all of that good stuff, and then about fitting that tail?
Absolutely. So mermaiding at the level that we do it, and again, there's different ways to do it. You can be a purely land mermaid if you want, but the way that we do it and what's made my company so interesting is that we're tank divers. That's really our specialty. So with that comes the biggest skill we have, other than to move and swim as a mermaid, and the physical training that goes into that, is the breath hold training. We're certified free divers. My elite team can hold their breath for over 3 minutes at a time.
Wow.
And that takes a lot of skill and a lot of practice, and it's something that's one of those, if you don't use it, you kind of lose it skills, so you have to keep up on that. And the hardest part about doing what we do is just that it's an extremely physically demanding job, and you have to be very physically robust, and that's not just necessarily musculature and the strength of working in the tail, but also having your eyes open in water. If you have sensitive eyes, there's not a whole lot to be done about that.
Right.
And so there's difficulties there. So it's definitely a physically demanding art because of all the being in water and dragging around the tail, which we'll talk about. And it's a mentally demanding art because you have to be underwater, be holding your breath, be in a position that your body does not want to be in. Mm-hmm. Every survival instinct in your brain is firing. Your legs are tied together. You basically have weights on, not real weights, but the tail. Yes. You're underwater, you can't see, and you can barely hear. And that is a position your brain does not want your body to be in. And then while you're down there and can't even see the audience you're performing for, you're trying to be natural and make them believe that you can see them and have those interactions while you're basically performing deaf and blind.
Wow.
So it's one of the harder art forms I've ever done, and I've swung from ceilings by my ankles. So as far as the tails go, tails vary. If you are starting out, do not get a silicone tail. I cannot harp on that enough. Get a nice fabric tail from FinFun and start practicing in that, because how you swim in a tail is not at all intuitive. Somebody should show you.
Wow.
The tails that we work in silicone tails. You can have fabric tails, you can have hybrid tails, like tails that have scales sewn on them, or you can have silicone tails. And silicone tails tend to be the most realistic, and they are very customizable. You can have them painted however you want. You can have different flukes, different shapes, but they are very heavy. I've had tails that weighed 20 pounds. I've had tails that weighed more like 50 pounds.
Yeah.
So silicone is a very dense, heavy material, and the amount of silicone that goes into that tail, it gets heavy fast.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it is definitely a workout. And then those tails are very expensive, and part of that is because for them to fit you properly and look realistic, they are custom made to your body.
Mm-hmm.
You're not only laying out the financial commitment of several thousand dollars buying this tail, but you're also kind of committing to keeping more or less the same shape for as long as you want to be wearing that tail, because it doesn't have a zipper, it doesn't have laces, it is what it is, and you can only fit it for as long as you can fit it. So it's they're very thick, typically, and silicone sticks to skin, which is a great general feature, but makes putting the tail on. I always tell people there is nothing beautiful or magical about putting on a mermaid tail. Like, there is no pretty part of this process. It is a lot of grunting, a lot of wiggling around. You're normally laying on the ground to do it because of the size of the tail. There's been situations we've gotten in where somebody's having a bit of a struggle. Sometimes you just have a rough day getting in your tail.
Wow.
One of their kids has needed to put like a lubricant on their hand and arm and reach down that tail for their friend and help get the foot straps on the heels or whatever needs to be done. We've had to shake mermaids into tails. We physically, they're standing up and we've picked up and ordered the shake in the way that you do like a pillow into a pillowcase. It is not a pretty process. Yeah, there's nothing magical about that part of the game at all.
I can only imagine. That's why, like I said, I've always, you know, seen the videos or seen pictures, and I'm just like, what is it like to, you know, put on that tail? I can't even imagine.
Every time we have a news crew, they're like, oh, can I film you putting it on? I'm like, no. Nobody needs to see this. It's not going to be good.
Oh, man. So is there any kind of extra, like, physical activities that you guys do? Is there like a lot of cardio do you do? Do you guys do strength training or lifting weights? I'm just curious, just to be able to, you know,
do what we do.
Do what you do.
So, cross training is pretty important. And all of us do cross train one way or another. Not surprising given the origins of the company, but a large number of us actually are circus acrobats of one variety or another, typically aerialists. So aerial is great fitness training in general. If you're looking for a new fitness regime, find an aerial studio near you. And it trains a lot of the back muscles, a lot of the arms and shoulders, a lot of the core, because the other thing that we have to do, being mostly tank performers, is be able to lift ourselves out of that tank while still in a tail that is now full of water by our arms.
Wow.
So pull-ups and things like that become very important, because you need to be able to lift that extra 60 pounds plus your body weight. That works out really well. Swimming, just general swimming, just without a tail. Overall, that cardio and getting to move in the water and be comfortable with the water. Free diving for breath holding and cardiovascular training. Running is always really good. But for the most part, our cross training tends to fit with our individual interests. Like, we have a couple of the mermaids that are avid hikers. Some of them are total gym rats that just want to lift weights all day. And it's just about maintaining an overall level of fitness and physical robustness, just no matter what that looks like for you.
Wow. So what inspired you or kind of piqued your interest about, like you said, aerial training and kind of getting into the circus arts of things?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was real little, probably about 10, I saw an aerialist on a PBS broadcast.
Hmm.
It was a male aerialist, and he was doing silks, and silks were red. I remember this moment very vividly. And I loved it. It was one of the coolest things I'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, I really wanted to be, you know, my childhood dream, such as it were, was to be an aerialist on a cruise ship. I thought that sounded like a lot of fun, like travel the world,
right.
perform.
Yeah.
That'll be great. By high school, when like sort of the reality of you've got to figure out how you're going to support yourself starts to set in, we got back on the engineering and the military career. Mm-hmm. But I think that never really went away, that interest. Mm-hmm. So when I got to college and there was a pole dance studio, I was like, okay, there weren't any aerial dance studios at the time, but pole dance is actually very close and very, very closely related. Mm-hmm. So I started with that and loved it. I mean, I absolutely mm-hmm. loved pole. It is still my first love. Like, it's my baby.
Wow.
And I competed as a pole dancer and performed as a pole dancer for years, for events and what have you. And that's how I got into the aerial dance, was I finally ended up at a studio that had silks and hoop in addition to pole, and was like, well, let's try this one now.
Great.
And yeah, by 2014, I was a freelance aerial dancer.
Wow. That's incredible. I can't even imagine. I was very shocked because I didn't even know you could compete.
Oh, yeah.
I think
pole is another industry, like not to get off topic, but pole dance is another industry that is just getting bigger and bigger.
Right.
People always think adult entertainment when they think pole, and that is where it comes from.
Right.
But at least where modern pole comes from. But there is an entire sport around it now. Like there's mm-hmm. competitions, conventions. I did circus-inspired pole, so I was performing for, you know, theater productions and corporate events and things like that. So it's not... if you were curious.
Yes, no, I was. That's why I asked, because I was just like, I didn't even know it was considered, honestly, a sport at all. Mm-hmm. So that's amazing. So
it's under consideration for the Olympics.
Really?
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. That sounds like another thing I'm going to follow up on.
We can talk about that sometime if you like.
Thank you. That'll be part two of the interview. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that. So do you see, in terms of, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, do you see the mermaid industry growing and getting bigger and bigger, bigger and bigger? Because I know a lot of people are like, you know, is this kind of one of those trends? Like, you know, maybe 20, 30 years from now, people say, remember when being a professional mermaid was a trend and everybody's doing it? Do you actually think it's projected to grow and get bigger, or do you kind of think this is like a little trend that's growing and, you know, maybe it'll last? It won't. What are your thoughts about that?
So I always tell people that it's definitely and certainly a trend, but it's not a trend like Twilight was a trend. It's a trend like iPhones are a trend. Like, yes, it is something that is growing now, but it's growing now specifically because we now have the equipment to do it in a way that we didn't before. The silicone tails that have become kind of the standard for professional mermaiding, those didn't exist till about 8 years ago, more or less. The material didn't exist.
Right.
So I think a lot of the growth of the industry has to do with accessibility. I mean, again, if you look at human history, we've been obsessed with mermaids in every corner of the globe since the dawn of time.
Yes.
So the interest, I don't think, is going to wane at all. It may wax and wane the way that circus has waxed and waned, the way that all kinds of other entertainment forms sort of grow and die. You know, baseball mm-hmm. used to be bigger, but now football's bigger. Like, sure, there might be some general industry variation. But overall, no, I think it's definitely going to continue to grow, especially given current trends. I think about 2 years ago it was that mermaiding as an industry became a $500 million industry. A billion with a B. Like there are people working as professional mermaids all over the world. There are companies that all they do is make tails. There are certifications for mermaiding from a couple different certification houses. There are vacations that are focused around mermaiding. There's modeling opportunities. Like this is not getting smaller at all. If anything, it's expanding into bigger and bigger regions.
That's awesome. That's That's simply awesome. So for you, in terms of 5, 10, 15 years from now, where do you see yourself, Morgana? What are your hopes and vision for the future?
Well, the problem is that until things get signed in about 3 weeks, I cannot tell you, but it is going to be big. It's
Woo!
Going to be, how does one phrase this with the NDA? It is going to be the kind of thing where suddenly mermaiding and my company and what we do will be available not just to the people who come see us live, but to anyone anywhere. And we have definitely expanded over the past year despite COVID. And, you know, while we didn't work during COVID because it wasn't safe,
right.
We've taken that time to work with new clients and to work through new media avenues, and there's going to be a lot coming. The biggest thing that I can share with you guys is that the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair is right now in the process of building out a permanent venue there. So it'll be a custom tank, a custom venue, and which will make it the first mermaid purpose-built show venue in the state of Pennsylvania.
Oh, my God.
So that's very exciting. And it's definitely going to continue to grow, and hopefully in a couple of months I can less coy.
Right, for sure. It was a bit of a teaser, so it definitely sounds like we're going to have you back on the show to tell us.
I would love that.
It is right, you know, about that, because it sounds super exciting and intriguing.
I'm very excited. We are hopefully on the precipice of something I've been working towards for about 3 years. I'm very excited. I just keep, you know, checking email and checking the phone for the call that says, you know, full speed ahead.
Right. So I definitely want to go ahead and extend my congratulations for that. Finding out down the line. So for you, in terms of purpose, how do you define and how would you narrow down your purpose as a professional mermaid?
So for me personally, it's a little different than most, I think. I think that people who get into performance in general or in fantasy performance in particular, the overall purpose is it's about transporting your audience to something else. It's about opening their minds to something other than their day-to-day.
Right.
And a lot of mermaids really enjoy that with performing for children. They love getting children to believe in the magic and to believe that this is a dream come true in front of them. And that's great. It's not what does it for me, though. For me, I love performing for adults. I really, really do. Like I said, most of our clients are large events, corporate events, casinos. We do a lot of events that don't even have children. I love performing for adults because for me, the magic is in getting an adult to believe in possibilities again. And just not to say that they're, you know, in any way unaware that I am a human person in a costume doing a performance. Like, they're 40. They know what's up. But it's the same reaction you're having. It's that, wait, I'm sorry, you grew up to be a professional mermaid? and it's that belief in magic, that belief of like, no, your wild dreams actually might be doable because somebody actually did grow up to be a mermaid.
Right.
And I like having that reintroduction of imagination and possibility to people's lives.
Right. And I think that's so important because, you know, if I'm just thinking about like Peter Pan in Neverland, right? When you think back to being a kid and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I would love for a place like Neverland to exist where you never grow up or to return, right? You get to go to this fantasy world where all your dreams and all of the cool things that you wish, there's mermaids in Peter Pan, right?
Sarah.
Super excited to see. So, you know, thinking about that. And then as an adult, you know, especially in America, we're so focused and busy on just, you know, work, being serious, which there's nothing wrong with that, right? Trying to get to the next level in life. But a lot of the times we don't just stop and take moments, you know, to just kind of relax and just go to this world where we can relax and, and you know, just really not necessarily forget about all of the issues, you know, the important issues and things happening in society and our personal problems, but, you know, just kind of take a moment and a step away from that and just go back. And I love that you guys are able to provide that, and that's what does it for you, you know, for adults, because as adults, we're worried about this bill we have coming up, we got to take the kids here, you know, what am I going to do when I retire, right? Just all of those things. And it would be so nice if people could just, you know, just like when they travel to a new different, you know, a different country and explore, just explore their very own fantasies, or go back to those childhood dreams where they're like, I wonder what it would be like, right, to be a professional mermaid, or to be, you know, in the presence of one. Are there male mermaids?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have some on the team. So individually, they're mermen. Collectively, the industry and everything is still referred to with the term mermaid or mermaids or mermaiding. Individually, they tend to be referred to as mermen, and they're wonderful. I mean, there's several in the community. There's some that are very high profile. We have mermen that work for us, and they're great in shows because, again, it sort of breaks a barrier. People have a very preconceived notion of what mermaids look like, and to be fair, the fact that I fit that mold is one of the things that helped me get started, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I've built in a lot of representation and a lot of inclusion to my team because, again, it's important to me that people understand that anyone can be a mermaid.
Right.
And anytime I get the opportunity to break out the male performers, it has an incredible effect of, again, giving people that belief, again, that you realize you actually can grow up to be anything, and here's, you know, a man who became a mermaid.
Right. Do you have any special stories or anything, moments that you can share with us from some of your audience or people coming up to you and be like, Morgan, I love the show, or I love sports, or any questions that you want to share with me?
One of my favorite performances like that, where it was just being able to have an effect on someone, was we did an event a couple of years ago for the Aquarium of Niagara in Niagara Falls. And to be fair, it did not go to plan. And for everything, sometimes things don't work. In this case, they had the pool we were supposed to perform in. They were unable to heat, and 50 degrees is very cold in water. So we were able to dive some of the smaller tanks, but mostly instead of doing a dive show, we ended up doing a lot of hours of meet and greet. Mm-hmm. And the reason it was hours was because people had come from both the U.S. side and the Canadian side, and we had over 3,000 people show up. There was a line around the building. We were larger than the building's capacity. And we didn't want anyone to be turned away disappointed. So we set up best we could, and we did, you know, mermaid meet and greet, and, you know, they at least got to, you know, come touch the tail and ask us questions. And all of my performers are very good at improv. They're very good at sort of getting a shy child to feel very comfortable. But one of the performers, Katya, she had this little boy who had waited in this line for like an hour. Like, these people waited long. We felt so bad, but there were things beyond our control. And this little boy finally gets up to Katya, and he's maybe 4. And he gets up next to her, and he, like, he's eyes big as saucers, looking at her, and she's like, oh, you know, and what's your name? And he's just, not a word is coming out of this child's mouth. He's clearly so flabbergasted and shy. And she's doing like, well, do you want to touch my fin, you know, and see what it feels? And nothing from this kid at all, just in total shock. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, okay, well, you know, let's look at mommy. Let's, you know, take the picture. Okay, bye. You know, because this kid just hasn't gotten a word out the whole time. And he leaves. And like I said, the venue's super crowded. The line goes on, and suddenly Katya realizes there's motion off to her left, and this little boy has fought sort of back through the crowd on the side and comes up to her and hands her a rock and goes, this is for you. And Katya still has that rock, too. This way, it is in a very special place in her mermaid grotto. And
oh, my gosh.
It's so sweet, but it killed me. So the stories like that are really the best for us as the kids. There are kids that more or less adopt us. We get presents from children all the time. And I had a similar situation at a Ren Faire once with a girl who we always explain to children that we can dry out and get legs because that preserves the magic. She was so excited to see me out of the tank, she kept tackle-hugging me. And I swear this 6-year-old almost took me off my feet. I had to sit down just so that I wasn't going to, like, fall over. So anytime we have that really special connection with a child or a patron is a really good day.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I can only imagine stories like that. And like I'm saying, I'm just thinking back to my childhood right now, and I'm like, man, I wish. I know, I'm sure, right? If you would have been a mermaid back then or someone, I would have loved and just you know, been mesmerized by the experience of having a professional mermaid in front of me. Maybe one day it would be so amazing if they had like some kind of, like in Disney World, but for mermaids, right?
Right.
Like some kind of awesome amusement kind of water park, I think would be.
We're actually going to be, this year, we're doing a residency at a water park called Aquatopia, which amusingly is also in Pennsylvania. And they are an indoor water park, and they will have our mermaids at their park for all of July and August.
Oh, wow, great. Thank you.
I love that.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That is perfect. So I'm sure viewers, anybody who has kids, anybody who's just any adult, that would be such a, that would be a fun girls trip, I'm thinking,
yeah.
to go there as well. So, yeah, well, Morgana, thank you so much for coming on the show today. You were incredible, and we really enjoyed learning professional mermaids, and I look forward to having you on the show again as well, because we definitely want to hear that big announcement. That
yes, I will let you know as soon as, hopefully it's only supposed to be a couple more weeks. From what I'm told, everything is agreed to, they just have to sign stuff, but,
right.
Yeah, so hopefully it'll only be a couple more weeks, but I would love to be back with you guys again.
All right, perfect. And so the final thing is just go ahead and share your website and social media. Anybody who may have questions for you after the interview, where they can go and find you and reach out to you.
Okay. So the website is Circus Siren Pod. I always tell people it's circus like Barnum and Bailey, siren like the thing that lures you to your death, and a pod like a pod of dolphins. And we have some photos and information up there. That's where you can find the calendar. I know it's March, but if anybody would like some pretty beautiful high art photos of mermaid, we have the calendar up there. The best place to follow us, though, is our Facebook. We have Facebook is Circus Siren Pod. We're on Instagram and TikTok. It's Circus Siren Pod across all three platforms. I will say our TikTok's pretty lit. But the we will post our shows and things in our upcoming season on Facebook as things confirm. Right now it looks like if all goes well, hopefully we will be back performing for kids and adults alike by July and August.
Oh, awesome. Wait, that sounds great. We'll definitely be looking forward to that. And please let me know if you guys ever do something in Dallas. We would be so...
I have been to Texas before for mermaid work. So
you
next
have?
Time I'm down there, yes.
Okay,
I did back in 2016.
Please let me know if you happen to, you know, as things open back up, be in Dallas. Love to meet you in person and come to a show and, you know, learn more about you guys. So thank you so much, Morgana, for coming on to the show. I enjoyed you. And you and I will talk soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Morgana. I did want to share a couple of videos that she sent me of her in action. So I wanted to quickly show those to you guys because it's so cool. Alrighty, and there's one more that I want to share with you guys as well. With you, wow, you guys, it's so awesome. I can't even imagine. I just keep thinking about when Morgana said that you literally have to be underwater with your eyes open the entire time. And then how heavy that mermaid tail is and your feet are tied together. Kudos to them. I know that takes a lot of strength and obviously a lot of training. Unfortunately, I would never be able to be a mermaid because my vision is so bad and I wear contacts every day. So I can't imagine my eyes being open and then me trying to hold my breath for like, I believe she put 3 minutes or more, 3.5 minutes or more underwater like that. So kudos to her. And like I said, I'm super excited to have her back on whenever she's ready and able to share her big announcement. So moving right along, we're going to go ahead and move on to our second interview for today. So
So I'm going to go ahead and play that. Alrighty, you guys, and we are back. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is the Jaira Nicole Show every Tuesday from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Central Time. I'm super excited because we have our final guest for today, Ms. Toria Jones, and she's going to be talking to us about her new podcast, Just a Little Pod, and talking about people who are living with disabilities and why she felt the need to speak up and speak out and bring awareness and spotlight those living with disabilities. So I'm going to go ahead and add her to the stream. Yeah. Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. I'm so excited to have you on the show today. So thank you for taking time out today to join us on the show. I just want to go ahead and start off by letting you introduce yourself, and then we're going to go ahead and dive right into the conversation from there.
Awesome. Yes. And thank you for having me, by the way. Yes. So I'm Toria. I'm from Houston. I've lived here basically all my life. And during the day, or my career, I guess you could say, I work for a nonprofit here in Houston, serving women, men, and children who experience domestic violence and sexual violence and things like that. So that's my daytime work, and then so during the nighttime, I guess you could say, I started this podcast with my best friend, and that's a little bit about me.
Right, yeah, the rest is history. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about, I love the title, I think it's so cute, Just a Little Pod. And we felt it was so important to, you know, start this podcast. How did this come to be? Was this something you always knew you wanted to do, or this is more kind of like a recent phenomenon? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, so it's been kind of like a long time coming. Me and my best friend have been talking about doing something like this for a while now, and honestly, it really came out of just, you know, my life living with a disability and, you know, everything that comes with it.
Right.
And I'm always talking to, you know, my friends about the things that I experience with living with a disability. And I'm always talking to them about it and venting and, you know, sometimes sharing my frustrations and stuff like that. So I decided, with my best friend, we decided to kind of put this to use and create a podcast where we talk about the things that goes on with living with a disability. And it's not, you know, it's not the same for everybody, but at the same time, it's something that I feel like everybody should know and to hear about. It's not a topic I feel is, I don't know, I guess, thought about. So, and then on top of that, it's even more special because you have Black women talking about disability, which is, to me, rare. I don't really see a lot of Black women talking about disabilities. I mean, they exist, of course, but right. I feel I just want to see more of it, so I kind of wanted this to be... you know, just wanted that to be for that, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. So can you start off by kind of sharing a little bit about yourself and your personal story, you know, growing up and living with a disability, kind of shed some light on that and share with us a little bit about, you know, some of the things that you experienced growing up.
Yes, definitely. So with my disability specifically, my disability is called achondroplasia, which is a form of dwarfism. And so basically my life, so I am shorter stature, I guess, to the public eye. But with my disability specifically, it affects the bones. It's like a medical condition. So like my arms and my legs are shorter than the average. And then of course there's other medical situations that I have to be aware of, such as like my spine and my brain. You know, hydrocephalus is a concern within the dwarfism community, and things of that nature. So living with this wonderful disability, it came with of course, bullying and frustrations and things like that, simply because people don't understand it. They just see that I'm normal, and they don't understand that there's more to it. And so having to, you know, navigate through life where things are not accommodating to me. So, for example, something as simple as me going to a grocery store and wanting to get some baking soda and it's up top, I can't, you know, get something as basic as that.
Right.
I have to I have to fix up my car to make sure that I can drive it, of course.
Right.
Just everything I have to have accommodations for, especially with things that maybe most people don't think about. And of course, I'm the only little person or a person with dwarfism in my family. So, of course, my family is wonderful, and they were super understanding. And I feel like when my mom found out about me being a little person, she instantly was like, let's research everything and figure out what, and she was very, focused on the fact that she wanted to make sure that I was raised, to be independent, just like any other person would be, have confidence in myself, and to, also understand that you might need help with certain things and to not be afraid to ask for help. So I feel like she did a wonderful job with that. It's just mostly just trying to navigate through life, knowing that life is not accommodating to me and having to, fight for myself and advocate for myself, in all realms, socially, medically, I have to advocate for myself sometimes. Everything. So, it's a fun time, but it can get exciting at times.
Absolutely. I bet. Like you said, I loved what you said earlier when you spoke about how society sees you, right? You said people see me as, someone short, shorter stature. But I love how you didn't make that kind of, you didn't let that define you. I love how you said your mom and, other people in your family, they made sure you were independent, having, a normal life, even though there were times where, you said there's things that you experienced, like bullying and trying to, find ways to, find certain accommodations and things of that nature. But I think that's so key and super important, because a lot of times, I feel like society wants to define people by their condition or disability, right? You have this disability, you have this condition, so you can only do this or you can only do that. And I admire you, and I love other people who are living with disabilities who are, basically breaking and putting an end to that narrative that, kind of just wants to categorize you guys, either all together or put you in these little boxes or categories saying, oh, this person can only do that, this person can only do this,
right,
and stuff like that. And when you mentioned earlier, a lot of times people don't even know that you are dealing with things that have to do with your spine, your bones, your brain. People just focus on what they see on the outside. So what do you think is something specific that people living with disabilities want the outside world, the community, society, to understand about them as individuals?
Yes, I personally think that I think disabled folks just want our voices to be heard. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we are pushed away. There's a huge history of isolating disabled folks because, you know, when you're disabled, you're not normal, right? You're not right. normal. You're not like everybody else. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I'm going to put you over here. Whatever you have to say, whatever you have to think, it doesn't mm-hmm. matter. It does not add to what we have going on. So we have a history of isolating disabled folks. And so what I think that disabled folks are wanting, especially now, is that we just want our voices to be heard. Absolutely. And we want our feelings and the things that we want them to be validated. Absolutely. We want, for example, to give you like the most recent is the whole COVID vaccinations and the whole COVID thing in general. Mm-hmm. Although it says, you know, folks with chronic illnesses are, you know, top tier, it's shutting out a whole bunch of other disabled folks. Mm-hmm. And then not also thinking about maybe they don't have transportation or maybe their caregivers are not reliable or something to that effect. So it shuts out a lot of people. And the disabled community is trying to tell you that and is trying to, you know, fight for themselves, but like everybody's, you know,
right.
You're being sensitive or right. You're being dramatic, things like that. So I just really think validation is something that we really want. It's instead of like asking for a seat at the table, I feel like we want to like barge in and make room for ourselves and say, you know, hey, we're here. And you probably know someone with a disability.
Absolutely.
Because it's actually way more common than you think. I think the latest statistic was like 1 in 4 living with a disability, whether you know it or not.
Right.
And so when you continue to shut people out, you're shutting yourself out, you're mm-hmm. shutting your family members out, your friends, and so it affects us all. And so, just listen to us. We have a lot to say.
I love that, and I love how you're so, you know, basically just really pulling for people to speak out. I love how you're not shy about it and you want people to know, hey, we do have a lot of stuff to say. Because like you said, people living with disabilities, they get overlooked. You know, people don't think about the everyday things. I'm sure that like the example you mentioned, it's kind of sad because I don't think grocery stores, certain buildings, they don't even think about stuff. I cannot name one grocery store where I'm thinking, where do they have, you know, some kind of accommodation for someone like, you know, for someone like you who can't reach, like you said, the basement, I believe it was, on the top shelf, you know, just different things like that. And it's really sad because I know people who, you know, they're afraid of when they're applying for jobs, you know, even if people who suffer from disabilities or mental health reasons, they're afraid of putting that down on paper because they're afraid of getting discriminated against and worse case, not hired. So I can't even imagine, you know, growing up what that was like. And so one of the key things you mentioned earlier was bullying. And I want to talk a little bit about bullying because I know it's something that a lot of people living with disabilities end up facing, and a lot of times it can just become so toxic, right? The environment becomes so toxic, people end up taking their lives, they end up leaving schools, right, trying to transfer to another one, just a whole bunch of different things. People afraid to post pictures of themselves, right, on social media or online because of the trolls on social media in today's time, what they're going to say and different things like that. So for you, basically growing up and, you know, having to deal with bullies and things of that nature, how did you overcome that?
Overcome is an interesting word. I'm still working on it, to be honest with you. I'm not going to lie to you. It's still like affect me to this day.
Right.
But yeah, I just try to tell myself that, you know, this is the body that I was given. Mm-hmm. And if you have a problem with my body, that's something you have to deal with on your own, because there's no way I can change it. And I'm trying to learn, again, I'm still learning to honestly embrace my body, my life and things like that. If, to be even more honest, it took me a long time to even accept the fact that I even have a disability. I never wanted to be associated with that term. I tried to be normal so bad. But at the same time, I've noticed that there's no running from it. I just have to embrace it. So I think that's one of the biggest things I would hope for other people to do, is to just continue to try to embrace your body. And you're the expert of your own body. So, like, although people might make fun of you or make, you know, comments or untrue comments about you or anything like that, like, they don't know the things that you experience.
Right.
They don't have the pleasure of being in your body. So, there's a lot of positives to being little, if you ask me. I just would hope that everyone living with a disability should just embrace it, and it's a part of your identity, and it's beautiful. Everything about it is beautiful, and it's unique, and it's special, and it deserves to be here, and it just spices up the life of everyone else. That's the best advice I can give you.
I love that. Spices up the life of everybody else. I love that. So what are some of the common myths and misconceptions that you would say people have about about your disability specifically, and then about people living with disabilities in general? What is that you typically hear or have heard?
So for me specifically, or for people like me with my disability, it's funny enough, there's a lot of funny myths out there. So just in general, people just think that I can't do anything, basically. People think that I can't drive when I can. People think that I can't have children, even though I can, and having children has nothing to do with my dwarfism. So I can have children, and then let's just say I can't have children. That has nothing to do with my dwarfism. Does that make sense?
Right.
So that's one, or that's another one. A lot of folks assume that both of my parents or one of my parents is also a little person like me. And I'm like, no, actually two average type parents can have a child with dwarfism. It happens, actually way more common than you think. That's another one. I think a general thing that a lot of people assume about my disability is that they think that I am just meant to be dependent on my family, I guess. Like, I'm not going to ever get a job. I'm not ever going to family. I'm not ever going to date. I'm not ever going to do any of those things.
Wow.
And I think, too, with all types of disabilities, I think that's also a common thing. A lot of people think that disabled folks don't have an actual life, when in reality, disabled folks have lives just like everyone else. They read, they date, they go out to bars and go out to clubs. They have an apartment, they have a house, they work 9-to-5 jobs. Yes, like it's wild to me that I have to say that to everyone else, but it's like, yeah, everyone is totally capable of having a typical life. It might look different than yours, but hey, everyone does the same thing, I guess we could say.
Yeah, absolutely. So going off of that, why do you think then in this society it's so hard for people to essentially see past someone who is living with a disability? It's kind of crazy because it's often the people who don't know anything about that person's disability are the ones who have so much to say about it, right?
Yeah.
People have no idea what it's like to walk through that person's shoes, to be in that person's body, yet they're so vocal about it and they have a hard time seeing past it. What do you think that is? Do you think it's just ignorance and lack of education and or the resources to educate themselves? Do you think it's something deeper within the person themselves and they're just kind of taking it out? What do you think about that?
I think it has everything to do with, like I was saying earlier, because of society has having a history of isolating disabled folks, there's a sense of, there is the lack of education. No one wants to put in that work to discuss about, hey, this is a disability. What is a disability? It's this, this, and this. You know what I'm saying? Something as simple as like Black History Month just came out recently or just passed recently, and disabled folks are always counted out in Black History Month. And so when I say that, people fail to realize that Harriet Tubman, for example, had a disability. Maya Angelou had a disability. Muhammad Ali had a disability. But that's one of those things that was kind of shut out. And what, the more that we shut those things out, there is going to create this environment of ignorance. And of course, when people are ignorant and they don't know what to do, I guess, when they see something, that's when they have the comments, the bullying, and the trolling and all that stuff. So, yeah, I really think that society has to do better about that. And that's why I'm always like, listen to us. We're here. And another thing, and I don't want to sound a little shady, I guess, but as much as people want to ignore disabilities, just because you weren't born with a disability, that doesn't mean that you could potentially become disabled. You see what I'm saying? Like, not every disabled person was born with a disability. Some folks became disabled later in life.
So
again, if you're going to continue to be ignorant and continue to push people out and continue to dehumanize disabled people, just remember that, again, someone you know has a disability, and someone close to you probably has a disability, but also you could potentially be one of us, you know? So I don't know if I just went off on a tangent, but I just thought that was important to say that. But, yeah, it's just we have to have these conversations. We have to talk to our kids about it, you know. I don't know how many times I've gone to stores and I've seen children, you know, point, laugh, comment, all those things, and parents don't do anything about it. They're just like, oh, you know, little Tommy, it's whatever, right? But it's like, no, that's a good teachable moment. You know, talk to your child about, oh, this person might have a disability, and let's talk about it more and educate more.
Yeah, so growing up in school, did you feel like and the school kind of set you up for success? And what I mean by set you up for success, just thinking about you maybe being in lower or elementary school and you had your peers and your classmates, do you feel like they made you feel comfortable, I guess? I could say if I'm putting that the right way, like comfortable around other people, do you feel like they kind of casted you out and was like, you know, maybe overdid it, like, oh, Toria, like, you know, they want to make sure you're okay, right? But maybe they catered to you a little bit too much. What was that like?
I'll be honest with you. My elementary school life was actually, I thought, was super perfect and helpful. And I think it had everything to do with my mom being like my biggest advocate. So my school during my elementary time did a great job accommodating to me whenever I like needed certain things. For example, I had to have like a stool under my feet when I'm sitting at my desk to elevate my my legs so it doesn't put pressure on my spine. And so schools was very good with creating that for me. And then on top of that, I had a learning disability. So I have a couple of disabilities. But I had a learning disability, so they were really good with my friends during that time. Of course, I think in the beginning, it was maybe more tough for me and for others. But after the first, I don't know, day or two, people were very nice to me and sometimes would fight for me as well if I was experiencing a bully or something. My teachers, I knew that if a kid was making fun of me or making me uncomfortable, I knew who to go to, and my teachers were really good with basically stopping that in its track. So I was very fortunate, I feel like, to have a pretty decent experience. I'm not going to say either that, like, I mean, I was bullied, don't get me wrong, but on a general sense, I think my school did a really good job. And then, like I said earlier, my mom being my biggest advocate also made sure that, you know, my school environment was a safe environment and that I could, you know, succeed in life. While I'm in school. So
right, absolutely. I think you bring a really good point. Like, you keep saying that your mom was your biggest advocate, and I feel like advocacy is something that, where I feel like, you know, everyday people need to be advocates, because you said one in four people are living with a disability, and you know, a lot of the times, a lot of us, we may not necessarily know exactly what that disability is, right? But that doesn't mean that we can't be advocates on their behalf. Because,
right,
like you said, one of the interesting things that I think about is whenever it's different, you know, like you said, Black History Month or Hispanic Heritage Month, or, you know, it's Pride, anything like that. You're right. You see all of the different panel discussions and speakers coming to talk and different people, you know, representing that community. But I don't hear about the Black women on this panel who are living with a disability who are going to speak, right? You don't hear about the LGBTQIA+ community, people living with a disability. You know, it's just kind of pushed off to the side there. I do think that advocacy is a big part of it. I do also want to talk a little bit about political correctness.
Yes.
There's a lot of people who, with political correctness, a lot of people will say it's kind of killing society. Like, oh, everybody's, you know, I'm sure you've heard it, everybody's trying to be politically correct this, you know, this day and age. But for you, and I would say disabled folks in the community, do you feel like political correctness is something that's very, very important to you guys? Or are you kind of more so understanding if people make the mistake and say the wrong thing? How do you feel about political correctness?
Yeah, so I don't know if I should speak, I guess, for the whole disability community, because I do know that some folks, certain things work for them, and then some that doesn't.
Right.
But I will say, to the best of my ability, on a general sense, like, for example, there's this thing of like special needs versus disability or disabled, right? The most common argument with that is special needs is pretty much a demeaning term to use, because what you're saying is you're basically trying to deny the disability and replacing it with like, well, she's just special, right? Or he's just special. She got special powers and things like that. No, like, let's talk, let's call it what it is. It is, it's a disability. You know, it's okay. It's not a bad word. Okay? Yeah, it's okay. So it's okay. This child has a disability. So what are the accommodations that this person's going to need to succeed in life? Okay?
Absolutely.
Right. So, so there is that conversation. So just trying to tell the community or tell the world that disabled is not a bad word. It's okay to call folks in that community disabled. Okay. Mm-hmm. I will say there's other terms that probably isn't the best, like handicap. That was a word that we used years and years ago. And it now has a bit of a negative connotation to it. So we completely got rid of that word, right? But there are some folks in the disability community who are totally okay with that word. So I guess the best thing to do is, like, to not assume. There's no harm in asking, what is the term that you are okay with and comfortable? I know for me, so the terms that I accept is little person when you're talking about my dwarfism. And I know popularly when someone sees another person who is a shorter stature, they like to use this word that I'm only going to say once because I honestly hate that word. Right. But they use this term like midget. And there's a very – I can go on for hours about this, but it's a history attached to that word, and it's not – first of all, it's not medically correct. And then two, it's very dehumanizing. It's not appropriate, and it can be triggering for a lot of folks, me included. And so, so if you want to be politically correct, you would use the term little person. That is a term that we created, and we are, like, completely okay with, because in reality, we are little. Like, we're not denying that.
Right.
So, and we are a person. And so, yeah, and then also, you could just call me by my name. That's also another awesome thing, too. But, yeah, I know political correctness is such a, I don't know, people, you know, get uptight about that. But I want people to also understand that words matter. Words mean things.
Right.
And words have had a history of having violence behind it, oppression behind it. And so you might not think that these words mean anything to you, but it does affect, in this case, affect the disability community because, we have a history, and it's not a beautiful, or there's some bad parts about our history. So please, you know, just, people are, you know, upset about it, but just understand that.
Right. No, for sure. I think you raised several good points, but one that stuck out to me is just ask. And I know there have been times where even I, you know, may have seen someone who's living with a disability, and we want to ask, right? We want to ask questions because we do want to educate ourselves, but sometimes we're so ashamed or, you know, scared to offend someone. Mm-hmm. But I believe that, you know, if your intention is right, you know, and you're really educated, and the way you're telling me, if I were to be like, hey, Toria, I don't know about your disability, please educate me, you know, please let me know the correct, you know, terminology, you know, do you mind sharing? I think if we get to that point where, like you said, we're constantly having conversations about this, it won't be considered, such a taboo or controversial subject or topic, right? I think a lot of times people, they don't ask because they're afraid.
Yeah.
They're afraid, and then they don't ask because society isn't putting forth these conversations, like you said, which is a great point. We're not talking about it at all. How do we expect people to ask if we're not sitting down like you and I and having conversations about these topics? We're not going to progress.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's little by little, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that people try to do try to have conversations like these, start, you know, making accommodations and stores and buildings that were different places like that. But I do definitely think in terms of people living with disabilities in society, really, you know, being more open to having conversations. We have a very way to go, unfortunately. So, Ms. Toria, what is next for you? I mean, you have this podcast. So what is your hope and, hope and vision for the future? What are you wanting to really do with this podcast and you yourself?
Yes. So I love this question. For the podcast, I just hope that it reaches enough people and it creates a fire in them to want to do something and to be better. I'll be honest with you. I hope this podcast challenges folks, makes them more comfortable because, I mean, the beauty of learning is there is going to be moments where you're uncomfortable. And because we don't talk about disability culture or awareness, a lot of us have participated in ableism and probably didn't even know it, right?
Right.
People probably don't even know ableism even is a thing. Okay.
Right.
So, yes, if you participated in something like that with my podcast, I hope that it can, you know, kind of expose that and have you think. I want you to think about these things. How can you do better? How can you be better? How can you make your environment more accessible for disabled folks? Mm-hmm. How can you, even in your language, how can you improve your attitudes and everything? So all of those things. I just hope it really sparks that fire within you. And then on a bigger scale, my hope and dream is I want to create a team of folks that includes the disabled community, because the beautiful thing about disabled folks is we're talented. There's a lot of wonderful comedians. There's a lot of activists out there. There's people who are actresses and actors that are out here killing it. Not just Peter Dinklage, so many. and they're not getting the exposure that they deserve. Mm-hmm. And I hope that I can be in a position to lift those people up and create a lane for them to be seen. Because, like I said, they deserve to be seen. And also for folks to know that we are multifaceted people. We can be funny without being the punchline. We can be sexy and not be laughed at.
Right.
We should be all of these things. And so I want to create a little world of disabled folks of all disabilities. Just having a voice and having full autonomy. And then also, with my best friend Ronisha, I just hope that she can also explode in the talents that she has. And I hope that she could stay with me forever in my world.
Right.
I also want this podcast to also push her closer to what it is that she desires as well.
Right.
So there's a lot of things, there's a lot of hopes with this podcast that I hope to throw out there. And then last thing, I'm sorry. And then I also just want to also kind of find a place to go. I don't believe podcast is the only thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of other desires that I was always afraid to reach for because of the fact that I didn't see a lot of representation out there in my childhood. And so I've never seen a girl that looked just like me in, SNL, right? I've never seen anyone that lived a life like mine on a big screen. So I wish to, create those things, creating media where I can see people that look like me and other types of disabilities, and we are seen as human. Because we are oftentimes are seen, even in the media, as these, you know, either we're a punchline or we're almost our, we hate our lives, we are a punchline, or we're here to make, like, the main character a good person, like a good human being. Like, we're just a crutch, right? I know, like, in film, we always talk about, like, the white savior in film.
Right.
But there is something similar with the disabled, like, the disabled trope. Like,
right.
The able-bodied person meets a disabled person, and it's like, how can I be a good person through
right.
you, right?
Absolutely.
And it's like, we're not here for that. I'm sorry.
So, we're right.
Yeah,
you're completely right on that. Actually, it's funny that you mentioned that because just a quick thing, I'm not trying to go on a tangent, but I have Disney Plus. I mean, everybody who knows me knows I'm a huge Disney fan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So about a couple of weeks ago, I watched The Hunchback of Notre Dame, and I remember even now as an adult getting so, quite frankly, pissed off because I could not understand. I was like, I felt like Quasimodo deserved Esmeralda. And it was so sad and so heartbreaking to see him, you know, basically be there to bring Esmeralda. And I forgot the other guy that, you know, with the whole savior prince. Charming, whatever his name is in the movie, you know, he grabs literally his hand and her hands and pulls it together. And I'm like, but Quasimodo's the one who saved her. Like, he deserves love, right? But then I wonder if it's almost this thing where maybe, you know, Disney or just other books and stories and movies still like, in the real world, right, that possibly can't happen, right? You can't have this, you know, gorgeous, beautiful princess marry, right, someone who has or is living with this disability. And I just think that's absolutely untrue. And just the message behind that, what it teaches kids, because I can't imagine, like you're saying, you're watching, you know, you and I could both be watching The Hunchback of Notre Dame, and how you feel about the movie would be completely different than how I feel. You know, there's probably some kids out there who are parents, anyone, who don't even feel anything, right, when they see it. I can't imagine if there's actually a child out there who looks like Quasimodo, right, or, you know, can relate to him and what growing up thinking, is that going to be my life? You know, is nobody, you know, interested in me? Is always Prince Charming going to get the girl? You know, just as an example. But it you bring up a really, really great point. And I think it's definitely something that people need to see. Representation is so key. And so I love how that's what you want to do. And I encourage you, and you already know I encourage Ramesha for sure, but I encourage both of you guys to keep going, because I think this podcast is just great and it's going to open things up and you guys are going to be on to bigger and better things for sure. So I'm just so excited about everything you guys have. And my final question to you is, I know we've been talking about so many ways that the community can better support people who are, you know, living with disabilities, but also in terms of people, you know, the oppression that people and disabled folks experience. How can the community, how can me, everyday people, other people, how can we better support, if you could just give us, like, one or two specific examples?
Yes. I would strongly encourage people to listen to people's stories. YouTube is my best friend, okay? And if you go on YouTube or something as simple as Twitter or Instagram, look at someone who is a part of the disability community. Read their posts, read their tweets, listen to their voice, and listen to what they're telling you. Listen to their experiences, and just immerse yourself completely into their world. It's kind of like the same for any type of other community. If you are not from this specific community, but you want to understand, the best thing is to just immerse yourself and to listen.
Right. Absolutely.
sometimes it's like, don't say nothing. Just listen to them, you know? And so, of course, just, you know, gauge it, of course. But, yeah, listen to what they have to say. Let them have a lane, okay, for themselves, right? And then right. My other point, too, or my last point, is to just, just, like, think about your language. Like, something as simple as that can really be impactful.
Right.
You know, think about what you're saying. Whenever you see someone, for example, who is vision impaired, think about what joke you are about to say, because, you know, everybody's a jokester nowadays. Right. Think about it before you say it. Is this okay? Is this, what is this doing? If this person hears this joke, what am I doing to them? Like, am I completely invalidating their lives right now? So, like, think about what you're about to say and then decide whether or not I probably shouldn't say that, or maybe I should say something else, right? So just, yeah, think about your language throughout your life.
Absolutely. No, those are really good tips, really, really good tips and important advice. Well, Toria, it has been such a pleasure to have you on the show today. You have definitely educated me. I know viewers are sitting here thinking the same way, and I look forward to having you, of course, on the show again. I just want to make sure that viewers know where they can go and listen to the podcast, and please share with us also as well any social media. For anyone who has questions, I'm sure Toria would not mind you asking her, and you can learn more. So where can we go to learn more and listen and all of that good stuff?
So we finally figured out Spotify, so we're on Spotify now. You would have to type just a little pod by Toria and Ronisha. You can also find us on SoundCloud, just a little pod. Our Twitter and Instagram is at just a little pod. And we have a website, justalittlepod.com. I also do a little bit of writing on that website too. So if you're interested in that, you'll find that, and you'll find our episodes. And this Friday will be episode number 2. So please follow us on all of those platforms so you can stay up to date. And, yeah.
Great. Super excited. Well, thank you again, Toria. Like I said, we'll definitely have you on the show again. And we look forward to keeping up with all of your projects and things that you and Miss Ronisha have going on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye, and I will talk to you soon. Yeah, of course.
Alrighty, yikes, that ended on a beautiful picture of me. But anyways, you guys, thank you so much for tuning in today's show. Those two interviews that we had today were just absolutely amazing. I learned so much from both of them, and there's so many key takeaways. When you guys go into the rest of the week, because it's Tuesday, we still got a couple of days before Friday gets here and it's the weekend, I really want to encourage you guys to just think and ponder on how you could be an advocate, not only for yourself, but more importantly for others. Just like Toria was talking about and saying, we need to support each other. We need to listen. You know, with everything that's going on, there's a lot of conversations happening about, you know, racism and hatred. And it's one of those things where a lot of times people, we don't know how to come together and be able to have these conversations.
you know, without kind of just hashing at each other and going back and forth and getting upset with each other. But I think one thing that we specifically all can work on is our listening skills and really actively listen. It's okay. There's going to be times where we disagree with each other. I may have this point of view. Susan or John may have this other point of view. But the key thing is we need to be able to at least start having these conversations. And that's why I have this show. That's why I really have different people from all walks of life, you know, just sharing their story and just creating this platform where we can have these open and honest conversations. And whether you think you know it or not, to be an advocate, to be an activist, you don't have to, you know, have some kind of special skill or talent. You can start being an advocate on behalf of someone else. And every day you can see something at the grocery store that, like Toria was saying, see someone at the grocery store, maybe you see a little person, she's trying to reach the baking soda and she's telling you, you know, I mean, well, if you go up to her and you reach that for her and, you know, she might kind of say, oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. You know, it's kind of hard, but just thinking of ways, if you're a business owner, what can you do to change your business to make it more accommodating to people from all walks of life? Were people living with disabilities, just everyday people in general, what can you do? So I want to encourage you guys and leave you guys with this as you continue on your day, as you continue your day throughout this week. What are some of the ways that you can constantly help and support others? It doesn't always have to be donating or contributing money, but there's just many small ways. Maybe there's, you know, with COVID, there's a lot of schools and teachers who they may need supplies. Maybe it's springtime, you're trying to, you know, clean out your drawers and you have things that you don't need. Can you give those away to someone? Can you find an organization or a group that needs them? Can you be an advocate for them? What are some of the things that you can do? Because we're all human. We're all human. And there's this quote that Martin Luther King said that I think is so important and I love. And he's like, life's most persistent question is, what are you doing for others? How are you serving others? And I think that's something every week, when you're writing down your goals or if you're just thinking about them, maybe you don't necessarily write them down, but ask yourself every Monday or maybe Sunday after you're leaving for church, after you're sitting down or relaxing, reading a book, whatever you're doing, what can you do this week to be of service to someone else? You know, can you go to your neighbors and just say, hey, just want to check on you. Last year, this year, it's been crazy. Is there anything you need? Is there anything I can help you with or can do? Is there someone, as you're going through and scrolling through, you know, your phone's contact list, and you're like, I haven't talked to Maria in such a long time. Check on her and see, is there anything that she needs? And what I loved about talking to Morgana and Tori today is their confidence in how the gratification they get out of doing what they're doing is because they're able to help others. Like Morgana stated earlier, she loves doing it because even though there's days where she doesn't feel like even waking up and getting out the bed, she knows she has a team of mermaids who are depending on her and she wants to be able to provide an avenue and a platform for them. She knows they need to work. She knows they need to pay bills. So she continues to let that be her motivation. Toria, she continues to not let society or bullies or everything that she's experienced stop her or bring her down. And she continues, even like she said, she's still trying to overcome things. She's still having sometimes has maybe a bad day, but she doesn't let that be her stopping force. She instead uses that as her motivation and she's determined to do something to provide different pathways, to create a podcast and to challenge people's way of thinking. So you guys, I want you guys to think of what are some ways and things that you can do with that. As always, it is such a pleasure having you guys tune in every Tuesday on the Jari Nicole Show at 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Again, I always want to say this at the end of the show. If there's any one of you who want to be on the show or if you know someone, and again, my show is for any and everybody, people all walks of life. every single person, even you who's watching this right now, you have a story to tell. There's something that you survived, that you've overcome. There's something that you're doing now that's unique and interesting. And so anybody that you guys may be able to recommend, or if you have something you want to say, please reach out to me. I love hearing from you guys. This is why I love doing that show, because this is a platform to raise awareness and have these conversations, even the tough and tricky conversations that may, you know, rough up some feathers. So, you know, I just want to encourage you guys to keep going and to keep pushing, and don't let anything, you know, don't let the challenges in life or the hard times you're going through, don't let people's negative talks or even your inner self-critic, right? Because that can be something that I know even I struggle with every day, just thinking, oh, Jared, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, that kind of good angel, bad angel thing, but more so it's just like coming right all at you, you know, all at you, telling you what you can't do, what you're not good at doing. Don't let that stop you. So continue to push forward and continue to grind. And you guys, it's Easter this weekend. Woo! This year is just moving by so fast. I can't say it enough. And as things are opening up, are you guys doing anything fun on Easter? Any Easter egg hunts for people who have children? Are you guys going to get in your Sunday best and go to church? Any dinners that maybe you're reuniting with grandma or people you haven't been able to see because now you're vaccinated and you guys still going to mask up and get together? But anyways, I have enjoyed this show. I enjoy all my shows. I enjoy talking to you guys. And so thank you so much for tuning in. If you're just now tuning in, unfortunately, we are at the end of the show today. But as always, you can join me back next Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Central Time and tune in to the show and ask questions and just support our guests. So thank you guys so much. And don't worry, because if you missed it, like I said, not just next Tuesday, we have these videos online. Go to TexasMetroNews.com, and you can also keep up with everything that's going on in the Dallas-Fort Worth community. If you don't live in Dallas-Fort Worth community, but you want to hear some more stories or learn more about our guests, you can go to my website, JaredNicole.com, to learn more. Thank you guys again so much, and I will see you all next Tuesday. Let's see if this video works this time, you guys, because for some reason, every time it doesn't want to start. Thank you.